Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, August 28th, welcome, friends, to the show. I am Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Today's show is about workplace etiquette.
Yep.
More generally, but also what's changed since the pandemic. We have two great guests lined up. However, in all honesty, I don't think we can start the show without us talking real quick about our workplace.
I know. Yeah, we're cube mates.
We're cube mates. So let's clear the air. Is there anything I do that annoys you, Cherry?
Not really. Avi is actually a pretty good cube mate. I mean, he keeps his stuff on his side of the cube. I keep my stuff on my side.
Let's be perfectly honest, though.
Yeah.
Clear the air. Not one thing.
Not really. I mean, you don't eat fragrant lunches. He's pretty quiet. We're not loud talkers on the phone. If we get loud, we both each get up and take the phone call someplace else. I think we're very polite people.
I agree. I have no complaints about you as a cube mate. But you're also just a generally very positive and considerate person. I can be a little bit more surly, so I was wondering if that
surly
if that might annoy you.
No, I mean,
time to time.
I'm thinking, I'm peeling it back, and I mean, I think I haven't had a day like I said.
This is good.
So good. Yeah, I wonder if as a group our entire team bothers the other people because we're in a collective cube area. So I don't know.
I don't know either. But this is good.
Yeah.
This is a healthy place to start the conversation today. We want to know at home, what is your office pet peeve? And have workplaces just become too casual? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. Our office is flawless, but yours probably not. So YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment right there in the chat.
Yeah, I do wonder what other people would say. Because, you know, we have our meetings right there. So I don't know. But
we already got someone who commented with like a 10-point list of things that they hate. So if you're a hater, come on down. Today is your day. 888-477-9499.
And this is definitely a listener-driven show, so I hope to hear from you. And by the way, today is DJ of the Day. So this is your chance to choose a song that deals with workplace pet peeves, working. And by the way, producer Paige has said, please do not pick Dolly Parton's Working 9 to 5. Okay, be more creative than
that.
Well,
you can pick it. She's not going to pick you.
Yeah, she's not going to pick you. So you won't be the DJ of the day if you submit that song. But of course, you could talk about all sorts of things.
I kind
of
hope people do submit it at this point. I think that'd be pretty funny. But
everybody should submit
it. Yeah, do 9 to 5. But anyways, the email is studio2@whyy.org. Obviously, we're looking for songs to end the show today. We always pick one DJ of the day on Thursday. We go out on a song related to the topic of the show. So like Cherry said, workplaces, etiquette, manners, blah, blah, blah.
And by the way, if you have somebody at work that kind of gets on your nerves, this is the day to send them the link to the show and say, hey, you know, if you haven't heard Studio 2, you might want to listen today.
Subtle.
And just share it. That way you can be subtle and nice and share it.
Speaking of sharing, how about we share three local news stories to
Absolutely.
Start off the show?
Yes. We're going to start with an update on SEPTA. There appears to be the beginnings of the possibilities of a deal. Okay, that's according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. The governor and the House Majority Leader appear to be open to using the Public Transportation Trust Fund money to shore up SEPTA. And this was the offer by Senate Republicans. But they say they will only do that if it's part of something broader. News of this movement and negotiation comes days after Democratic leaders and SEPTA had basically said that using PTTF money was a no-go. We had that on the show on Monday.
Yep.
But House Majority Leader Matt Bradford told the Inquirer that he would be open to using that special fund, which is around $2.4 billion right now, if and only if it was tied to finding a recurring revenue stream for public transit. And if and only if money that has been used is ultimately paid back to that fund. His comments come after Governor Josh Shapiro had told reporters something very similar on Monday. By the way, I texted Senator Vincent Hughes, who was on the show on Monday. He underscored that the key to using that PTTF money is that it must be replaced. They do not want it because he had argued that taking from that fund would be like defunding SEPTA's capital projects because that's what that fund would be for.
Yeah.
He also said that there was other important matters that are being discussed right now that are also sticking points. And so while he isn't really confident that they have a deal, things are opening up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big openings is that there used to be this bright red line around the PTTF for Democrats. Can't use that money to plug the operating deficit today. Well, that red line is clearly gone at this point from everything we can tell publicly. So that opens up the possibility of a deal. It makes me think that this will not drag out so long that we get to the January 1st deadline. That's when five regional railroads would have been canceled and a bunch of other cuts would have taken place. So it feels like we're getting to something before that. You don't want to be too optimistic before you actually have a deal in place. But that's the feeling I get from the reporting the last 24 hours.
Yeah, but by the way, September 1st is when fares will go up for SEPTA.
Yep.
And September 2nd is when there are some regional rail service cuts that will also go into effect. So things are going to continue to move, not to mention the fact that monies to counties and schools still held up.
Yep. Story number two, there is growing evidence that an online extremist group was behind the two recent swatting incidents at Villanova University. You'll recall over the past week, there were two instances where someone alleged an active shooter at Villanova. Both of those were fakes. There was also a similar call placed about the King of Prussia Mall. An anti-extremism nonprofit called Global Project Against Hate and Extremism told the Inquirer that they believe the responsible group is called Purgatory, which exists within a larger network called The Calm. Wired magazine, meanwhile, spoke to someone who claimed to be a member of this group, Purgatory, and says that he himself made the false swatting reports. Law enforcement has not commented on any of this, by the way. We don't know where their investigations will lead, but now a couple of sources pointing the finger at this murky, shadowy online extremist group.
Yeah, this was a pretty shocking revelation to me. What also stood out was that the Inquirer was actually able to review evidence of their actions. They reviewed audio files and screenshots showing the members of this group making and talking about the calls. And they seemed pretty proud of what they did, according to that reporting. They even watched the chaos that ensued from their false reports via live stream in real time, which makes it appear to me to be exceptionally cruel. And right now there is no law that adequately deals with this or punishes this. There are a couple of federal bills floating out there, but it seems like this needs to be addressed. There was half a dozen swatting calls on Monday alone. And I mean, and you know, that shooting in Minneapolis. Yeah. I mean, these things really do happen, and it's pretty scary when you get that call.
Yeah. And it's hard for us to explain why this group does this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the experts quoted in the Inquirer say it's part of building up credibility among online extremists. Mm. So, you know, it's, again, hard for us from our vantage point to really understand that. It seems just so bizarre, but that seems to be driving some of this behavior.
Yeah.
Third story now, Cherry.
Yes. A very Philly debate is raging online. And that question is to chop or not to chop the meat and cheesesteaks. Okay, this is real. Hundreds of people have commented on this, okay? Philadelphia is home, as you know, to many, many cheesesteak spots. You probably have your favorite. I know I do. And but this debate began because online food influencers start going up to the window at Pat's King of Steaks, telling them that they were doing it wrong because they do not chop the meat for their cheesesteaks. So Pat's invented the original cheesesteak. People dispute that, but that's their tagline.
I believe them. I believe them too.
So Frank Oliveri, fourth generation owner of Pat's, went to social media to explain. Here's a clip of what he posted online. Take a listen.
You don't need to chop it up like baby food. Like all the other places that chop the sandwich up. Like baby food. Real ribeye. See the way it looks? So all you people that have cheesesteak places that think you're doing something different, why don't you do it like the original, like it was originally? See what I mean? There's no chopping. There's no noises. It doesn't sound like a railroad crossing in here.
That was a very Philly response. And by the way, he says other places chop up the steak because they want to pretend like they're giving you a lot of meat. But they're giving you, they say, Pat's, we give you real ribeye. Right? This is a lot of meat. They chop it up and make it look all fancy because they're skimping on the meat. And so, hey, you know, bottom line, I think to me is a lot of these influencers come from out of town. you can't come to Philly and tell the OG how to make their cheesesteak. I'm just saying.
Yeah. The gall.
The gall of it.
It's ridiculous.
To chop, do you like it chopped? What's your take?
Let me be clear about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Okay. I don't care. We have lost the plot on cheesesteaks, folks. This is a working man's sandwich invented by a guy with a hot dog grill in South Philadelphia. It's cheese. It's meat. It's some onions. It's a roll. You can add a few other things if you want. We got to stop being so precious about the cheesesteaks. Let me also be clear. Here in Philadelphia, There is not a wide range in quality. Yes, some are better than others, but they're all pretty darn good.
Delicious.
So let's stop the gatekeeping with the cheesesteaks.
The gatekeeping.
I don't care if you chop it or not. Pat's is pretty good, by the way. I know everyone hates on Pat's.
Yeah,
Pat's
the comments fine. Were hot. They turned
Pat's
on Pat's.
Pat's is fine. Oh, my God. The people with the Pat's and the Geno's. Jeez. It's ridiculous. This has become a thing now to turn up your nose at Pat's and Geno's or whatever.
Well, the
Because that's where out-of-towners go. I'm sorry. That's my thing with the cheesesteak. Stop being so precious about it. It's a fine sandwich. A lot of great sandwiches in Philadelphia.
This goes back to the chop or no chop. It's just like whiz or no whiz. You know, it's just like people like to argue about this. I was just surprised that there were hundreds and hundreds of people getting in arguments about this.
Do you care if it's chopped or not chopped?
I never really noticed.
Who cares?
Yeah.
It's a cheesesteak. It's such a basic sandwich.
It started controversy.
Oh, my
gosh. Oh, goodness. Another thing that starts controversy in the office is etiquette issues.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have conversations with people when they get on your nerves, when there's that ringtone?
Reheating the cheesesteak and that steaky smell all over the office.
All those things. And so that is what we will be talking about because Labor Day is on Monday. Perfect timing. So what is your office pet peeve? Have workplaces become too casual? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And we look forward to hearing from you. We'll be back after the break.
Shut up, Pats. I got your back.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Summer's end means it's time to head back to the office.
No, God! No, God, please, no! No!
Yes, God, yes. The workplace has changed since the pandemic, and it's a little hard to tell what exactly the rules are these days.
Yeah, what's too formal? What's too casual? And what are we allowed to put in the microwave? So today on the show, we're talking office etiquette in a post-pandemic world. And we really, really, really want to hear from you, our listeners. What's your office pet peeve? And in your opinion, have workplaces become too casual? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, put the comments in the live chat.
And Melinda on Facebook says, it's good I don't work from an office. I don't have a filter.
Ooh.
Melinda, we encourage you to call into the show, by the way. As you mull those questions we put out there, let me introduce our etiquette guides this hour. Lizzie Post is co-president of the Emily Post Institute and co-author of Emily Post's Business Etiquette. Lizzie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Love the Philly cheesesteak conversation.
Yeah, give your cheesesteak takes if you want. Another hearty welcome back to our Eric Thomas, who writes the nationally syndicated advice column Ask Eric. Eric, it's always great to see you.
I'm always happy to be here. I'm very happy to hear that your office is very chill and calm.
Yes, surprisingly so, right? Surprisingly so. And so before we bring in callers and some of the hot takes we're getting from our listeners, I want to kind of set the scene because before the pandemic, the rules were pretty clear. I remember, you know, how it was in the office. Mm-hmm. And then we get this, you know, work from home for so long. And now we're all kind of back to the office on a regular basis. Why do you think it's so difficult? What has sort of shifted, Eric, that has us feeling really squishy about the rules?
Well, I feel like being able to work from home, the veil got lifted on what parts of office culture were performance versus what were necessary. You know, if I can have a meeting in my sweatpants from my living room with my cat on my lap and everything and all the work gets done, then why do I need to go to Brooks Brothers and spend hundreds of dollars on a suit and come to the office at 8:59 on the dot? So I think people are kind of questioning everything, which I think the pandemic gave us the opportunity to do. And I think the larger question that people have been struggling with is, what of our traditions are useful and what of our traditions are simply just left over from a different time?
Yeah.
So Lizzie, let's get into that.
Yeah.
What is still useful and what was a relic of a past time? Like, what, let's focus specifically on what the pandemic has sort of, as Eric alluded to, kind of pulled the curtain back on. Are there things now that you would have said before the pandemic, yeah, that's like a solid office etiquette rule, and today you're mm-hmm. like, maybe that never really made all that much sense?
I feel like there's a lot of things in this category. And even without the pandemic, I think we were starting to blow them up. I mean, prior to the pandemic at Emily Post, we were talking a lot about leggings and athleisure wear making its way into the office environment. And what version of those things could you get away with? And we had sort of the tech industry coming in with the hoodies and jeans and saying we can work in these ways. And as Eric said, if the work's getting done, what's the problem with how I look? So I think in some ways we've been testing the boundaries on this even without the pandemic. And I think the pandemic just made a lot of people go, I just don't care. The world has blown up. Nobody knows what is going to happen. I'm going to sit there in my PJs with my cat on my lap, deal with it. And I think that's the pendulum swinging one way and then coming back the other way as we're returning to office, as we're recognizing that sometimes it makes us feel a little more productive to be dressed up and ready for that call, or that we find we do get a better response from people when we are on time, when we're making our calendars accessible to everyone and we're coordinating and being a part of our work environment. I think that we're kind of starting to come back, and it's ironic because a lot of the traditional things, showing up on time, clear communication, presenting yourself professionally, they're all coming roaring back right now. And they're the traditions we're leaning on to kind of get over our pandemic hump.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that you can totally do when you work from home mm-hmm. that may be very annoying, though, to your cube mate mm-hmm. or the people on the other side of the cube wall or things like that. And so, like, I think, you know, we kind of got real lackadaisical, and then you come in the office, you try to do the same thing, right. And people get a little PO'd. How do you even start the conversation? And before we go into the things that are really annoying, mm-hmm. Sort of how do you start the conversation? Because do you tell your coworker if that ringtone is just too loud?
I think so. I mean, we live in a society where everything is telling us you're the main character. You are the only person mm-hmm. that exists on the subway car. Smoke them if you got them. Do whatever you want. And that is absolutely not the case. And so, like, I often think about it. When I went to college, I read one of those getting ready for college books. And they were like, you need to sit down with your roommate and have a state of the room conversation. What are our ground rules? What are our community agreements? Is it no wet towels on the bed or whatever, you know, all these little things. My college roommate had a snake in the room with hated mice.
Oh my goodness.
We didn't cover that in the beginning conversation. I probably should have. So in an office, it's the same kind of culture where you have to say, like, we actually have to speak our culture into existence. Mm-hmm. And so often we act like the culture is just a thing that exists around us, and everyone is on the same page. And whether it's a family system, an office, a relationship, college roommates, whatever, you have to always be speaking the culture and then reaffirming the culture and revisiting the culture, you know? And I think we act like an office is one set thing. And I think it's helpful, and this is for supervisors and for employees, to realize that an office is whatever you're making it with the people in the room at the time.
Did the snake stay for the whole year?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I don't want to derail it, but yeah, no, it was real rough.
And this should have been mentioned at the gate that he had a snake. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, let's bring in a caller now.
Yeah.
Let's bring in a caller now to refocus things. Chris is from Newtown Square. Chris, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment about office culture and etiquette?
Mine is a pre-pandemic and post-pandemic classic problem of people leaving their food in the communal refrigerator and leaving it there to rot away and turn to green mold and expecting other people to clean it up.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, anywhere I've worked, it's is a thing. So that's just, no matter, you give people notice, please clean out the fridge, you put notices on the door, blah, blah. Eventually, it's always the one person who's cleaning it out for everybody. So that's it.
So true. Actually, I want to cue up a clip now with that, because that there's a great scene in the show The Office. Of course, mm-hmm. We're going to play Office clips during the show.
Of course.
Where Pam, who is the receptionist at the office, it puts a note on the microwave because someone's made a big mess, mm-hmm. and is trying to somewhat passively aggressively resolve the situation. So let's hear that clip from The
to
Office.
Whoever made the microwave mess. The microwave is a shared kitchen appliance. By not cleaning it up, you are basically telling whoever follows that their time is less valuable, as they will have to scrub out your disgusting splatter. Sincerely, disappointed.
Well, that is just obnoxious.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wait, what, the mess or the note?
The note. So holier than thou.
I liked it. Don't you think the person who left the mess is the obnoxious one?
No. The note is way more obnoxious than the mess.
Sincerely disappointed. Get off your high horse, Richie.
So, Lizzie Post, what are some rules to remember around the kitchen area mm-hmm. at the office? And then, attached to that, how do we resolve those disputes around messes and cleanliness in those shared spaces?
So generally, we all take care of our own things. We don't leave dishes in the office sink. It's not like our kitchen at home where we're making decisions, hopefully with the people that we live with, about the state of the kitchen and about our MO for taking care of these kinds of things. When it comes to the office, you are expected to clean up immediately after. You don't leave it till after that last meeting. You get it done, or you make sure that you have enough time at the end of your lunch break to clean up. And that also goes for if you're prepping food in the kitchen, too. You need to wipe up the crumbs. You need to wipe up the little sauce dribbles that get on the counter and mm-hmm. things like that. This space should be pristine every time someone enters it to use it. And when it comes to that food, I do think that can be harder. People bring things in intending to maybe eat them throughout the week. And I think you've got to have one of those office office rules of just on Friday, every Tupperware has to be removed from the fridge it needs to get cleaned out. But these are the kinds of things that sometimes companies and organizations have rules about them that are stated, and sometimes they don't. And you end up with a group of coworkers trying to figure it out for themselves. And I do think that managers, in the case when there hasn't been something explicit said, can step in and make a rule like that for this group. This is one of the important ones. This is about cleanliness. This is about making sure that spaces where we're doing things like prepping food that we're going to eat are going to be safe for us, are going to be comfortable for us, and that we're respecting the other people who are going to use them.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to invite our listeners at home and elsewhere to chime in. The questions of the day are, what are your office pet peeves, and have workplaces become too casual? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube and Facebook, leave those comments in the chat. And by the way, Jack says smelly food that they microwave gets on his nerves. And by the way, I want to throw out there, I have a problem with crumbs. Mm. Like, I really am icked out by crumbs.
I'm just curious.
Because it's other people's stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long it's been there. And, you know, if I touch a crumb, I just feel really grossed out. And I'm just like, can y'all please deal with the crumbs?
Right. It's not what it symbolizes. It's more like you have like an aversion, like a gut aversion.
Especially at work, even more at home. Okay. You know what I mean? So I definitely, that is one of my pet peeves.
I feel that.
And so one of the things that we saw from the comment is smelly food in the microwave. And, mm-hmm. and I want to talk about smelly food.
Yeah.
Because people bring in their lunch, Eric, and you know, and folks, you know, you might have had leftover salmon or fried fish or mm-hmm. tuna, I don't know, but are there some rules about, you know, your lunch having some, being a little bit more odoriferous?
My most Batman villain take is bring whatever you want.
Oh,
I know.
No.
Yes,
Eric.
That's right. Send the comments.
Oh my
gosh. Here's the thing. One person's smelly lunch is another person's leftover that feels like home. It's home cooking, it's whatever. I like, here's the thing. I think that the office kitchen is a space that is constantly under assault. We are never going to find peace in this space because the way that people cook it at home is so different.
Yeah.
People, you go into somebody's house, you sometimes people's houses, you're like, I'm not eating here.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's true. And then you got to share an office with that person. So there are times where I'm like, let me bring my little chobani. I'm going to eat it at my desk. It doesn't have to touch the kitchen area. Now, if your kitchen is... if the airflow in your office means that the kitchen, it doesn't, if there's not a hood or whatever system, and you're, and all the cubicles can get the smell of the fish or the whatever, you got to be a little bit more judicious. You got to think, is this something that I want to be smelling at 3 o'clock, you know, when I'm a little sleepy and I'm a little grumpy? But I do think that we get into, I think that we get into dangerous territory when we start saying, like, your lunch is smelly, because then we're starting to talk about cultural issues.
Yeah. Does this apply to all types of smell conflicts, though? Because people, like, on YouTube, Jill saying, I'm sensitive to smell, lotions, perfumes, laundry detergents.
All of the stuff, yeah.
I get bad headaches, nauseous. And Jim on Facebook says, no fragrance at work. I don't want to smell and taste your fragrance for the rest of the day. You chose it, not me. So are you drawing that line just around food, Eric? Or does it apply to, like, the scent that you might wear, lotion, et cetera?
I mean, I think, you know, we have to, this is where the ground rules conversation comes in. If you're working in an office with someone who has a fragrance sensitivity, you know, that's the beginning of that process, the beginning of that working relationship is the time that you can say, hey, because of who we are, this is a shared community value. The other part of that, though, is that, like, a lot of people see having a fragrance or a cologne as a sign of professionalism. Mm-hmm. And so this is where, like, tradition gets in the face of people.
Yeah.
And I think people always need to win out. So it's about talking to your coworkers and saying, hey, I made salmon last night. I brought some in. Should I, like...
will you have a problem?
Will you have a problem with that?
Yeah.
I'm allergic to tree nuts. And so, like, I don't really have a problem with like, it in the air. But if someone is, like, heating up, the like, a sort of sticky bun with, like, pecans or whatnot, and it gets, you know, in the air, I could start to have a problem, you know? But that's not something that people are going to know. And now you have a weapon against me, unless I say it.
So Lizzie, and you know, Eric said that we have to start these conversations. I mean, where do you even start and how do you broach it? Because I don't think I've ever had a conversation at work about what the rules, like, I have never had a conversation about the rules. Like, I don't even know what they are. And I've been here for 4.5, almost 5 years.
I've been here for 10 years.
I mean,
no,
I don't know
what the rules are. No idea.
Nobody sat me down.
I think asking to have the conversation is important, recognizing that this could be problematic, or for whatever reason it started to become problematic. Could we talk about that? Could we get this conversation going? I think if you're really unsure, there's, and first of all, I just want to say, I'm so glad that Eric said you don't, and this is how the kindergarten class I know talks about it. You don't yuck someone else's yum.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. Yeah. What, you know, it's like an easy way to just think about the idea that it might smell bad to you, but it doesn't smell bad to everyone. Mm-hmm. Or like you said, it's that home comfort food. I would, though, advise not bringing super strongly smelling foods into an office. This might not be the environment to try to have those leftovers or to try to order that kind of a dish, just because we're dealing with so many different people. And it's not our own home.
Yeah.
It's an office environment. It's a shared space. And there are small groups where we can have that collective conversation and figure out what makes the list, what doesn't, that sort of thing. We can get real specific about it. But there are other environments where that's less of a possibility for us. So if you want to head it off at the pass, if you want to be a part of not making that a problem for other people, try to just be aware of some of the foods that you're bringing in and how much of an impact you might have on someone else with them. Like you said, with that chobani yogurt, you're not going to really be impacting anybody.
But it may be that if you bring something a little smelly, or maybe you don't eat it at your desk, but you eat it, like, if you have an outside space, you could do it there.
Courtyard time. I want to read in a comment here from John on YouTube, who says, if this is really important, I want to get this your thoughts on this, Lizzie. John says, if we can't work from home, then office culture needs to adapt to be more casual. Employers can have their cake and eat it too. Personal problems can be worked out easily. And I think what John's getting at is the idea that now that there is this choice we're all aware of between working at home and working at the office for a lot of people and a lot of different types of work, that the office needs to be more accommodating to the individual's preference. We basically kind of have to put up with everybody else's kind of individual sense of decorum, at least to a greater degree. It's like a leverage conversation in some ways. What do you think about that, Lizzie Post?
I think that if you want to use it as leverage, you go right ahead. But I also think that each employer gets to set, in a lot of ways, the expectations and the culture for their company. And they're going to need to be the ones directing that. You have law firms that are classic suit and tie spaces, and you have law firms that are not. And it really depends on the company culture of each individual space. And we can't even say that industries are a certain level of formality anymore, or that you have to expect this. So it's really about figuring out what works for you. And the person who wrote that in clearly is wanting an environment where that kind of attitude towards casualness is appreciated and valued. And I think that's the kind of environment they need to seek out to work in. Someone else might say, boy, that really distracts me.
Yeah.
It really doesn't create a professional environment for me. I get work done better when I got to be in at 9 and I'm buttoned up for the day and it's expected that I've showered and shaved or whatever it is that's a part of that routine. And so I think one thing that's kind of cool about working in the world of etiquette today is that it's not just this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's how can you as an individual make it work for you and the environment that you're in? It's
find your fit. Find your fit.
Yeah, I love that's the quick way to say it. Yeah. I love that fit.
And I think about when I got out of school and I got my first job and I worked in corporate America, which was very strict. It was like a box that you had to fit in. And now things have changed so much and you can kind of be whoever you are and show up as authentically as you are to work. So, but I do wonder, like, is there anything lost by it becoming so casual? And I think Lizzie touched on a little bit of that, Eric, but I just wonder if we thought that through, like by becoming, you know, super casual in our attitudes at work and being very loose and dealing with all the stuff, is anything lost?
I think we lose an intentionality. I think there is an assumption that if I just show up however I am at work, that work is going to adjust. And unfortunately, that is just not how things work, you know? I think this is why it's important to have organizations that prioritize workers' rights and have strong unions, because then you have someone who is thinking about how you exist in the space. But, you know, as somebody who's worked in offices, I worked at a law firm on South Broad Street for a while. I worked in nonprofit spaces, but I also work in theater a lot. I understand the importance of a costume. I understand the importance of a set. And so, like,
this is like a set.
This is a set, you know? These are costumes. Yeah. I'm wearing costume. I chose what I wore today because I was going to your office. This is not how I dress all the time. Mm-hmm. But I am cognizant of what the function of our relationship is. And so, like, we lose something when we say they're going to get who they get, because that robs us of our ability to say, I exist in one way in this office space or in this retail space or in whatever this professional space is. Mm-hmm. And they don't get all of me. And that is actually healthy for the worker to say, this is
the version of me that you get when
Absolutely.
I come to work.
Yeah. All right. Keep those comments coming, folks. Your office pet peeve? Have workplaces become too casual? Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Two big things at least we haven't gotten to yet. Noise.
Oh, yeah.
And digital etiquette.
Oh, yeah.
Those are two big
ones. Emails.
And we've got some emails coming in on those topics. Keep them coming. This is Studio 2 on WHYY. Much more to come. And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And we've been talking about workplace etiquette, what it means to be a good coworker, and the bad behavior that can throw everything off track. And we want to know from you, our listeners, what's your office pet peeve? Do you think workplaces have become too casual? You can call 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our YouTube and Facebook viewers, leave those comments in the chat.
Let me reintroduce our wonderful guests. R. Eric Thomas writes the nationally syndicated advice column Asking Eric. And Lizzie Post is co-president of the Emily Post Institute and co-author of Emily Post's Business Etiquette.
By the way, I want to read this comment from Melanie on Facebook who says, my pet peeve as a cubicle dweller is people with offices nearby who take all their phone calls on speaker. Mm. Why should others have to listen to your business when we are trying to get our work done? Get some headphones. I've actually put up with it for 15 to 30 minutes and then got up and shut the door of senior leadership. Loved working from home during COVID. So glad I'm retired now.
And I've never encountered that. I've just never encountered. That's crazy.
No, I have encountered that. And
really?
I'm like, close the door. Yeah, like you have a door. Mm-hmm. Close the door. Yeah. So, I mean, this is sort of going into digital, you know, this is one of the digital things, people on phones. Are there certain rules about cell phones, email? Like, let's go through some of the etiquette rules, Lizzie, that folks should just automate. I mean, like I said, no one's had the conversation, but these are things that you should just know that you don't do in the office.
Absolutely. Your phone should be on silent at the office, unless there's some reason that it is that your cell phone doubles as your work phone. And it's expected that it, like, that's the company rule, is that you have to have it on ring so that people, you can hear it or something like that. Other than that, your phone should be on silent. Your phone should mostly be away for the majority of the day, unless you're taking that quick break to check it, that sort of a thing. But absolutely no speakerphone whatsoever. This is just rude behavior to have your entire conversation out loud for everybody else to hear and be bothered with. You know, it's like bad enough when you hear half a conversation. Somehow it's worse to hear both sides of it over that scratchy speaker. This goes for playing a podcast, playing the radio out of your phone, playing a TV show out of your phone, which we see happen at work too. There should be nothing coming out of the speaker of your phone for anybody else to hear. It is not for their ears. It is a distraction to them. It's a disruption. It is rude behavior.
And it's so easy.
It's my biggest pet peeve.
You know what?
That is why I'm just like, give me this soapbox. I'm
No, that's why the reason I'm with you on this one, Lizzie, is because there are so many alternatives now. There are so many ways, like easy ways to contain mm-hmm. your noise.
Yeah.
But we get into more of a gray area, I think, Eric, when we talk about just how loud people mm-hmm. are, how mm-hmm. loud people are talking, casual conversation between two people at a desk that you can hear over a cubicle wall. That to me is, I feel trickier to navigate. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on it.
Well, you know, I think self-awareness is a real crisis in our world today. No one has any idea that they exist. But I think, there are so many times where you can get caught up in a fun conversation with a coworker or even just a productive conversation with a coworker. And it's just always important to remember that you are in a shared space and that everyone's capacity for focus is being pulled in 9,000 different directions, that jobs are changing, and that this isn't a coffee shop. And even if you were in a coffee shop, there are some coffee shops where people come over and say, like, hey, can you quiet down?
Totally.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, you got to take that up with the mayor. This is a public space. You can't quiet me down. But in an office, you absolutely can say, hey, let's set a bar for the volume here.
I
think it's maybe the golden rule there is just like be aware and be reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And like, is there a reason for you to raise your voice in the office? I'm not certain, you know, unless you are a radio announcer for the Phillies, you know, the main thing you should, but other than that.
You're calling a Bryce Harper home run,
exactly.
Keep it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Conversational volume is helpful. Library atmosphere, I think, is the most helpful.
Yeah. By the way, Simone has a full list.
Oh, my gosh.
We can go back and forth on these.
Trade back and forth.
Let's go back and forth.
This is Simone's list, by the way. This is intense.
This is intense. Number one, don't interrupt folks when they are speaking.
Blowing your nose every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Not one time did your hands get washed, by the way. She's talking about the blowing of the nose. She also has a problem with yelling across the office.
popping that gum out loud.
Smooth. She takes pride. She also said shirts that don't fit, and you know they don't fit.
Simone also says, I don't want to see your underwear.
Yeah. Talking like you're 2 years old.
Don't be on the phone with the customer who has diarrhea mouth. Say what you have to say and get off the phone. And finally.
Yes. Put them phone ringers on silent. Simone has spoken.
She went too far on some of those for me.
This is wild. I want to work. Where is
you like them all, Lizzie? You like all of those?
Simone's got to be a manager. Someone needs to do everything.
I feel like, look, the conversation's going to take as long as it takes sometimes. Right. Like, I feel like that one, I'm like, you can't.
That is true.
You can't tell someone get off the phone. So being on the phone is the job for some people.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And like, that's also like, you know, that's a customer management thing. Like, what is your objective and when are you allowed to end the call? I do want to, Simone, please send me the link to where you work because I would like to submit an application. This feels hilarious to
seminars
me.
Seminars for that place.
Oh my gosh, Simone.
And you know, but a lot of people don't know these rules, especially have younger people coming in. They don't really know like some of the rules of the office and people like I said, they don't. There's no rule list anywhere.
Right. And when it's also, some of these are personal preference. Don't smack that gum.
That one I had a problem with too.
Yeah,
but I was like, the gum popping, it's a tick. It's like,
I mean, well, it's about a peaceable atmosphere. Is me popping my gum going to disrupt the peaceable atmosphere of the office?
I feel like you could pop gum at least a little bit in a library. If we're doing library style rules, I don't know. Can you not pop gum in a library?
Like, what would you mean by popping gum? Is like, I mean, pop, 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 or one accidental
so
pop?
So I'm sensitive to this because I've been told I'm a loud chewer. And I'm not trying to chew loudly. This is just how I chew, I think.
You've been told that? Who told you that?
I don't want to put him on blast.
Now, did this person have misophonia? That's the other thing.
This person is very close to me.
Chew loud. I get nervous when I eat carrots, and I'm like, can you hear me chewing?
We have bodies. So, we have to have a better somatic awareness as a society. Like, we're just going to have bodies, and people are going to blow their noses, Simone. It's okay. It's allergy season's coming up.
But then some people blow really loud, though. Honk, honk. I mean, do you have to do that?
I don't know. I can't control. What's going on with my sinuses?
I gotta get Lizzie, I gotta get you back in the conversation.
I'm sorry, digital etiquette.
I gotta get you back in on digital etiquette because we got a couple comments along those lines. Olivia from Narberth says she hates when people end an email with "Hope this email finds you well." Okay, that's a personal preference from Olivia. Kara says my biggest pet peeve is when people in cubicles in the same area are on Teams calls with each other. This is what conference rooms are for. So let's talk like email etiquette, Zoom call, Microsoft Teams call etiquette. Like, what are some big highlights for you, Lizzie Post?
I like starting the email with, I hope this finds you well, if you haven't reached out to the person in a while. I feel like getting the pleasantry out of the way in the beginning is a little nicer than doing it at the very end of the email after you've asked for everything you want. But I also think it's important. This is one that I think a lot of people don't think about. It's not that it's like terribly wrong or bad, but don't preemptively thank people if they haven't done the thing yet. So a lot of times we'll end it with, thanks, Lizzie. And instead you could say, thanks so much for any help you could offer, best Lizzie. Mm-hmm. You know, and that it allows the thanks to be its own thing rather than be coupled with a goodbye or be preemptive when someone hasn't done the thing yet.
Totally.
But with email, one of the best pieces of advice that we give out is just read your email aloud before you send it. Mm-hmm. You'll hear your tone. It's the best you can do, hoping that someone else will pick up the tone you intend. And it'll give you a chance to catch any of those obnoxious mistakes if you don't have some kind of, AI correcting device like Grammarly or something like that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, and I think about the difference because we communicate on so many different types of platforms now. You know, you text people, you use Slack and other interoffice devices. There's comments within Zoom, right? And so is there a difference between how you communicate? Because you can get right to the point on text, but that may sound really rude on email, Eric.
Yeah. Context is really hard to navigate with these different platforms. Slack generally is more conversational. Texting is more conversational. conversational. Emails, you have to think about what I always think with an email. Do I want to hear this read in front of Congress?
Exhibit A.
I mean, because it happens. Yeah. And so sometimes, you know, and there are some cultures or some email relationships that you have with like a vendor, a client, a coworker, where you can just say like, hey, you know, 3 p.m. meeting canceled, you know, see you later, whatever. And then there are some where you have to sort of put on the formality and think about what is the context for a person who is not sitting inside your brain.
Yeah.
So again, beginning with clear information, clear direction. Hi, so-and-so. So, you know, these people are CC'd on this email. No need to reply. And then a simple sign-off, like Lizzie said, you know, best is my personal preference. Some people don't like best. It gets real complicated.
I use best. I've gotten pushback on that. And yeah. I just don't know what the answer is at this point.
The answer is to never email.
That's right. There it is. There it is.
I use email sparingly.
Debbie, and I believe this is producer Debbie, says reply all should be used judiciously. I do agree with that. But Lizzie, let me ask you, because this is driving toward in my mind, we're talking about all these communications platforms, is how much communication is too much, mm-hmm. and what are the limits? And I feel like this really comes into play with out of office times, like after 5, before 9. Mm-hmm. You can get mm-hmm. in touch with someone now, and like, yep. should you? And what should you be thinking about before you make that contact with someone at 7 at night, 10 at night? Like, what are the things that you should be asking yourself? And on the other side of that, should you feel obliged to respond if that happens to you? Yeah. So help us navigate. That's a tricky one, Lizzie.
I think we have to know the expectations from our actual employer.
Yes.
What do they expect from us? Some expect that level of connection. Others don't. In fact, some put really severe lines on it, like, no, you can't. So I think know what you're working with from the beginning. And then I tend to think that if you're going to operate outside of what you've been told to do, then it's an emergency situation, or it is so funny that you absolutely
I like that.
Right mm-hmm. now, those are the only two things I'm going to be checking that work text message for. And my cousin is my business partner, and we have those kind of lines with each other. It's either an emergency if we're calling after 5, or it is the funniest thing that cannot wait until tomorrow. But I do think it's important to be aware of the type of environment you work in. Set clear boundaries with your team, mm-hmm. with the people with, let them know what to expect. Volume of communication, do not hit send until you have the whole message, the whole thought done. I don't know about you, but I hate it when I get, even if it's on something like a Slack, the 6 messages yeah. with like half a sentence in each of them.
I'm guilty of that, but I feel yeah. you. Mm-hmm. I feel I am guilty of that, but I honestly,
I'm guilty, but I is you're wrong.
Right. You're right. You are right.
Yeah, I want to read a couple comments. Judy on YouTube says, people who come in sick because they don't want to use their sick days. It's the only way I got sick because once my kids were out of school. Kay South on YouTube says, I sat through a presentation on professionalism from a Gen Zer in a crop top. I think millennial bosses are too permissive and it's confusing for Gen Z about what is okay at work. And so I want both of you to kind of, you know, we only have a couple more minutes. Like, are there like things you should never wear to work, even, and we have more casual environment here. Mm-hmm. So, is there a line in the sand that you say to just don't bring it, don't have it at work?
You know, I really hesitate to wade into this, and I get these questions in my advice column a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it really depends on the context of yeah. your work environment, of your culture, where you are.
Some jobs allow you to wear shorts.
Yeah, some jobs allow you to wear shorts. Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, and people have different standards around how much of your body you show, what parts of your body you show. So I think I am hesitant to say there's something, you know, beyond like, if you would wear it to the beach, you probably shouldn't wear it to the office, you know? Yeah. Like, I think that's a good standard, but like, I'm a little bit more lax than probably most offices are going to be.
Yeah. Lizzie, you liked that, the sort of the beach.
I really did. I mean, I also watched a lot of Baywatch, so of course they're going to wear it. I would say that is such a good one. If you're not going to wear it to the beach, don't wear it to the office. Mm-hmm. I also think we call them the 2s in our seminars, is not too short, too sheer, too loud, too loose. That's another way. It's like people always worry about things getting too small on a body. things can be too big on a body that can make it look unprofessional too. And so I think whatever it is you're going for, try not to be the extreme version of it, you know? That's sort of how we handle a very similar attitude to Eric, where it's like, there's a lot of leeway in how we dress and what we consider professional today and how someone's going to choose to operate based on what their life is. And I do think that needs to be respected. Balance that with your work environment and the goals that you have.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Craig on YouTube says, which I think is a good rule. Craig says, I don't need to see your belly button.
That's okay, Craig.
All right, Craig.
I mean, fair, you know.
Okay, well, Craig.
What about the belly dancers, Craig?
That's a good point. That's right.
But that's your job.
When Craig's the boss, no belly buttons. Right. We got that. All right. Well, I want to thank you both for enlightening us this hour. R. Eric Thomas writes the nationally syndicated advice column, Asking Eric. Eric, always a pleasure to have you.
Likewise.
Lizzie Post is co-president of the Emily Post Institute and co-author of Emily Post Business Etiquette. Lizzie, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun.
Yes, and we are hearing our DJ of the Day song. Our DJ is Clarence, and the song is Stevie Wonder's version of We Can Work It Out. Take a listen.
Love that version, by the way.
I love it.
Studio 2 is produced by Debbie I Hate Reply All Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineer today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Good cube mate, Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us.